With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, joined alongside by none other than Fran Duffy as we continue our trek here at the NFL Scouting Combine. And on this Saturday evening, starting to get my days a little bit mixed up, we're going to preview the defensive front seven. Fran, how much are you looking forward to this?
I'm looking forward to it. It should be another good day out on the turf here at Lucas Oil Stadium. The defensive front seven features a ton of talent in this year's draft. The defensive line is chock full of talented players in the senior and junior class. And this edge rusher group, Mike Mayock talked about it at his press conference today to close out the media session. This is a very, very talented edge rusher group. So a really talented group of guys in all these different positions taking the field on Sunday.
Okay, so we're going to have Dane Brugler from CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com to give us his preview of which players should shine during the position drills that will take place on Sunday. And we're also going to have one-on-one interviews with Eli Harold from Virginia. Very, very motivational story. Lost both of his parents at a relatively young age. Dug really deep into that and why he went to Virginia and decided to declare early for the NFL draft. And is, in fact, probably my favorite one-on-one interview of all the ones that I did here to this point in Indianapolis. And we'll also hear from one of Fran's favorite players, Oboom Gwachum from State. So, of course, having gone to Oregon State, we have to ask him about the Civil War with Oregon. But first, let's delve into our draft buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
It was an electric atmosphere at Lucas Oil Stadium on Saturday as the quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers took to the field for the 40-yard dash, but more importantly, the position drills. And I know everyone is probably sitting there like, when it comes to the 40-yard dash, these are some of the players who you want to see. And Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net gives us his risers and sliders from day two of the position drills. And we'll start at the quarterback position. Really, the two top guys coming into this, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, and they both cemented their spots atop of the quarterback leaderboard with their performances on Saturday.
But Jameis didn't run well. it was funny just seeing the reaction to Jameis Winston's 40-yard dash and people kind of worrying about that. That's about as far away from being important as it is to the quarterback position. But Jameis Winston looked good throwing the football. Marcus Mariota looked good throwing the football. A lot of these quarterbacks, I thought, did a pretty decent job. I thought Brandon Bridge threw the football well today. Brett Hundley threw the football well. So a lot of these guys did a really good job today.
It seemed like Winston, not really surprised, but with Mariota, I think people wanted to see how he could throw the deep ball, how he could throw some of these intermediate routes, some of the things he wasn't asked to do as often at Oregon. But again, it's all going to come down to, can the NFL teams think he can make the transition from the spread offense at Oregon to the NFL?
Yeah, no question about it. That's going to be the ultimate deciding factor when it comes to the draft placement for both of those guys.
All right, some other quarterback buzz. Brett Hundley, and this is per Tony Pauline as well, is apparently doing an impressive job with the interviews and might be raising his stock a little bit. He's someone who you think has struggled in his last year at UCLA, Fran.
Yeah, no question about it. But, you know, we talked about it last night on the podcast that, you know, you look at his physical tools in this quarterback class, a guy with that strong of an arm, with that athleticism, some of the physical tools that he brings to the table, a high character kid for all intents and purposes. We heard from him on Friday in the media room. And then, you know, obviously the report came out today from Tony Pauline and others, in the NFL insider business that he's really acing all these interviews with teams. So it's not surprising. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he was the third quarterback off the board, only because if teams feel that he's coachable, if teams feel that he's got the high character to pull through some of those issues that he had, between the lines on the football field, that maybe he can overcome some of those issues.
Will he be a first-round pick at the end of the day. That's something that we can discuss on a further podcast. Adam Schefter actually also reported, he added to the report about Hundley doing impressive with the interviews, that the Browns would have considered him a top 10 pick a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I would. I don't know how I feel about that, but I would say that he's a better prospect than Johnny Manziel. And, you know, Johnny Manziel went in the first round. So
yes, he did.
What do I know?
So, Bryce Petty from Baylor was, per Mike Mayock from NFL Network, throws the ball the prettiest, but beware if you're the team that selects him, that he is more than a one-year project.
Yeah, no question about it. And he talked about it today, just in terms of his the way that he's got to learn to play from the pocket. And this, not just for Petty, but for a lot of these spread offense quarterbacks, all the timing, you know, and some people think that when you talk about how a quarterback's always in the shotgun, that it's just the physical, the literal sense of having to take balls from under center. It's not just that. It's also the footwork, the timing that goes with throwing all those different routes, all the different three-step routes, all the different five-step routes, all the different seven-step routes. There's all different senses of timing that go with all those different route concepts. And guys that are in the shotgun at all times, or you look at a guy like Marcus Mariota, a guy like Brett Hundley, where there's zone read element to the game where it's not even just catching the ball and drop back. You're catching the ball and there's some kind of read action off of that. It's not a natural, there's no natural timing to a pass game there that you're going to see at the NFL level. So that's where the learning curve comes from with quarterbacks.
Okay, let's dig into some more of the risers and sliders from Tony Pauline. We'll go to the running back position. Duke Johnson of Miami and Jeremy Langford, whom he called probably the most underrated back in this year's draft class for Michigan State, as the two running backs who helped their cause the most.
Yeah, people were worried a little bit about Duke Johnson and the way that he ran. I believe the 4.6 range was where he was typically timed by most people. So people were worried about that. Look, I mean, I think his quickness is more important than his ultimate long speed. So obviously he did his job in the rest of the drills there. And Langford, I thought, ran better than people expected. You know, obviously he's got a bit of a versatile skill set. I thought he caught the ball pretty well. He showed some instincts as a runner when you watched him at Michigan State. I didn't know that he was going to run in the 4.4s, and he was able to accomplish that today.
All right, for the receivers, two of the names that frequently are mentioned among the top or the battle for the top receiver in this year's draft class, Amari Cooper of Alabama, Kevin White, West Virginia, were two of the risers, and I don't know how much higher they're going to be able to go in this process. Although, at the end of the day, Pauline said White, to him, is overall the better guy because he runs a little bit better than Cooper, and on top of that, he has the size measurables to boot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I would agree. I've had White as my top guy for a while. But, I mean, look, it was funny watching this unfold as the day went on. Early on, obviously, Amari Cooper ran first, and he ran in the mid-4.4s, low-4.4s. And everyone said, "Up, Amari Cooper, fourth overall, don't worry about it." Then Kevin White comes out and runs the 4.35, and everyone freaks out, you know. So it was funny to kind of watch that unfold. But both of those guys are very, very good receivers. And like we talked about last night, it depends on what you ultimately want from your receiver position when you're looking to add that kind of guy to your receiving core. Do you want the big, physical, high upside guy that Kevin White is, or do you want a safer, more elusive, smooth athlete that Amari Cooper is? It depends on what you want.
Or do you want the coffee ice cream that is Sammy Coates?
That's right.
You have had to listen to last night's edition of
the podcast. It's interesting. Sammy Coates is one of the more polarizing prospects based off his field work, you know, during the season. But even today, after drills, I heard some people really, really liked Sammy Coates. Others were not very impressed. So the polarizing figure that is Sammy Coates continued here in Indianapolis.
Because I think the preconceived notion that you have of him as being a freak athlete who has inconsistent hands, really today nothing happened to really dissuade you. It's either you're going to be on one side of the ledger or the other.
Sure thing.
All right, so here's a receiver not too many people are familiar with, Baylor's Antoine Goodley. You know, the go-to guy for Petty at Baylor, but nonetheless, he is someone who helped his stock today.
Yeah, no question about it, and he was a guy that I was really interested to see up close at the Senior Bowl. Unfortunately, he got hurt on the first day. He came back later on in the week, but before he got hurt, was really, really good against press coverage, perhaps better than any other receivers at the game in terms of being able to run through contact at the line of scrimmage, create some separation initially. And, you know, when you watched him at Baylor, he was so good, obviously tracking the deep ball, which, you know, they were able to connect on so many times there. But with the ball in his hands and in the short game, His ability to gain yards after the catch was almost like a running back. I mean, he's built really, really thick. He's over 210 pounds. He kind of reminds me of a Pierre Garçon in that way, in terms of a guy who's got the vision as a ball carrier to take it the distance.
And last but not least, anyone who was following the action on the field throughout the course of the day is probably like, how have you not talked about the star of the timing and testing drills? And we're getting to him right now. We're saving the best for last here. It is actually someone whom Tony Pauline thought had a chance to shine during the drills, Chris Conley, receiver from Georgia, who had a 4.35 in the 40-yard dash, a 45-inch vertical. That means he pretty much could jump over you, Fran. And in the broad jump, 11 feet, 7 inches.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, Conley, at that size, that athleticism, look, he was the 2014 SEC Scholar Athlete of the Year, so he's got the off-field as well. He's had some injury issues during his time at Georgia, so, I mean, that's going to be the big question. I think he had some drops on the day, so, you know, what is Conley ultimately? Is he going to be a project wide receiver? Do someone think about maybe moving him to the defensive side of the football with those athletic numbers? I don't know. Those are going to be the questions that people are going to be asked, but obviously he's a heck of an athlete.
And the sliders on the day, Ty Montgomery from Stanford and running back Josh Robinson from Mississippi State.
Yeah, Robinson is a guy we talked about last night, is a guy that he's not going to wow you athletically, but the bowling ball, he's very good between the lines. I really like Josh Robinson and what he brings to the table.
All right, let's go into our top five ranking segment that we call Fran versus the Machine. And so what we're going to do is take a look at some draft experts' top five rankings in some of the positions and the ones we're featuring tonight. Again, the defensive front seven. We'll take a consensus ranking and then compare that to Fran's own top five. So should I get the towels for you? So I know you're going to start sweating. You're going to get nervous that you're being put on the spot here.
I'll force through it. We're already halfway here. So these guys take the field tomorrow. I'm excited to talk about the front seven players.
All right, so let's start with the defensive line. USC's Leonard Williams, consensus number one guy right there, no question about it.
Sure.
UNAV's number one pick, I should say, not consensus number one. He's definitely the consensus number one. Denny Shelton from Washington coming in number two. Malcolm Brown from Texas, number three. Oregon's Eric Armstead at number four. And then you have a tie in the fifth spot, Jordan Phillips from Oklahoma and Eddie Goldman from Florida State. Now, let's get to Fran's rankings. Okay, get the paper all set here. Leonard Williams, you have as number one. Eric Armstead, you have as number two. Jordan Phillips at number three. The one surprise here, Carl Davis from Iowa at number four, and Malcolm Brown at number five. And Carl Davis, he was, I'm trying to see where he was here on the rankings. He would have been tied for the next spot, so he was just out of the consensus rankings.
Next man in. Davis is a guy that really, really impressed me when I watched him on tape. I know Tony Pauline says that he has, you know, flashed brilliance during his time at Iowa, and, you know, teams are going to question what his production was like. He only had 3.5 career sacks there, you know, as a Hawkeye. But I really see his strength as a run defender, his ability to two-gap. I think he could be a great fit as a nose tackle in a 4-3, a possible 5 technique in a 3-4. I think he could, even in a pinch, turn into a nose tackle as well at that size. So I think he's a guy that offers some versatility. Jordan Phillips, when I watched that kid, I was really, really impressed. I think he's got the athleticism, the length to play any spot in a 3-4 line. He's immovable as a nose tackle at times. His ability to anchor down at the point of attack is really, really strong. The only problem is he had back surgery 2 years ago, so the medicals this week will have been big for him. And Eric Armstead, having him that high at number two, his upside, I mean, Leonard Williams is the better prospect, but Armstead, I think, could be as good as Leonard Williams. And who knows, down the line, may end up being the better of the two. The question with Armstead, very limited production. If you look at the two guys side by side, Leonard Williams had 26 tackles for loss in his career. Eric Armstead had 5. Leonard Williams had 13 sacks. Armstead had 4.5. So obviously the starting experience was more. It was twice as in favor, actually, of Williams. But you look at that production, there's the big issues there with Armstead in terms of consistency and overall production.
All right, let's move to the edge rushers. And number one, little surprise in the consensus rankings here. This one was close. Randy Gregory from Nebraska got the top spot over Dante Fowler from Florida. Number three, Vic Beasley from Clemson. Shane Ray from Mizzou, number four, and Bud Dupree from Kentucky, staying in the SEC is number 5. We'll go to Fran's Edge Rankings. You have Dante Fowler at number 1. Gregory at number 2. Number 3, Owe Digizua. Number 4, Vic Beasley. And then Preston Smith from Mississippi State rounding out your top 5.
Yeah, you know,
I was getting ready to say Digizua, I think, during that whole time.
Yeah, so. You got it. You nailed it, though. It was pretty good. Fowler is a guy that we've talked about. I know this comparison has been thrown around with him in the past, but Dante Fowler out of Florida reminds a lot of people of Justin Houston. The reason why I took him over Gregory at my number one spot, I think he's more well-rounded. His ability to set the edge and play as a run defender is more so than Randy Gregory, who I think struggles at times at the point of attack. Odigizua is just a very, very well-rounded guy. I like the frame. I like his effort. I like the way that he plays the game. Obviously, the injuries in his past, the double hip surgery, will have an impact. It will ultimately decide where he gets drafted, I think. Beasley is a guy that I think is flying under the radar a little bit, but has some athleticism. I think he's going to do really, really well in the drills tomorrow. And Preston Smith is a guy who really, really stood out to me. The ability to bend the edge at 6'4.5", 270 pounds. I think he could set the edge really well. A high motor guy. Reminds you of a Quentin Copels almost out of North Carolina, who was a first round pick a couple years ago to the New York Jets. I really like Preston Smith.
All right, now let's go to the off the line linebackers and the consensus number 1, Benardrick McKinney from Mississippi State. Eric Kendricks, the brother of Eagles linebacker Michael, is number 2 from UCLA, the Buckus Award winner. Denzel Perryman from Miami at number 3. Paul Dawson from TCU at number 4. And Stephon Anthony from Clemson checked in at number 5. We'll go to Fran's rankings here. He has McKinney at number 1, Kendricks at number 2, Perryman number 3. The differences come at 4 and 5. Jordan Hicks from Texas and Quan Alexander from LSU.
Yeah, and the thing with those two guys that really stood out to me, number 1, their athleticism. And when you talk about linebackers in today's game, the ability to play in space, to be a 3-down player and play in your sub packages, I think Hicks and Quan Alexander bring that ability even more so than a guy that I really like. I really, really like Denzel Perryman. I think he's very instinctive. He's tough. He's a good tackler. He can play sideline to sideline. But the big question with Perryman is his athleticism. And when you look at a guy like Hicks, you look at a guy like Quan Alexander, they have the ability to play in space. They're relentless. They're tough. They're rangy. I really like both of those guys. Hicks has had an injury history that's been really, really unfortunate. He was a big-time recruit out of Ohio, ended up at University of Texas. 2012, he missed 10 games with a hip injury. The following year, he missed eight more games with a torn Achilles. So, two tough seasons there for Hicks. And Quan Alexander has had issues as well. With the injury issues, 2012 he broke his ankle. He missed most of his senior year in 2011 with a knee injury. So some injuries in his past as well. But two guys that I think are sideline to sideline players that can offer abilities as blitzers in coverage, defend the run. I really like what both of those two guys have to offer.
All right. So for another perspective on the top players at these defensive front 7 positions, we're going to send it to our Mr. Relevant, Dane Brugler from CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
We're pleased to be joined here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com by Dane Brugler from CBS Sports as well as
NFLDraftScout.com.
NFLDraftScout.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at DP Brugler. And Dane, we want to bring you on to preview the front 7 position drills are going to take place here at the NFL Scouting Combine. And this edge rusher class, very explosive. A lot of guys jockeying for, mid to high first round grade selections. Right. Who do you think will stand out during the drills?
I think we'll have several guys stand out. Here at the Combine, this will be Vic Beasley's show, his chance to shine. And we saw him on tape at Clemson running circles around tackles. He has that type of athleticism. He's a former tight end. So we expect him to perform really well. And then also Bud Dupree, Kentucky, he should do well. Randy Gregory, Nebraska. All these guys are first-round picks trying to be that first pass rusher taken. But I think Dante Fowler will be that guy. Now, this might not be the best setting for him to shine necessarily. He might not have the best testing times. But to me, he's the best of the group.
They've already come in and weighed on the weights and measurements. What did you think of some of the weights where the guys checked in at?
Not too many surprises. I thought, you know, Vic Beasley at 246 was 10 pounds heavier, he said, than what he was at the end of the season. So that's interesting. We'll have to see on during the drills. Does he still move as fluidly? Does he still have the change of direction? Does the extra weight hinder him at all in his movements? That's something to watch with him. Randy Gregory, 235. That's a little surprising. You would think he was in that 250 range almost, but did he lose weight on purpose to stand up and be a linebacker? Is that his goal? So some things we'll find out. I hope we'll get a chance to talk to Randy this morning, and then we'll have to see him during drills, see how he does. But 235, that's smaller than Barkevious Mingo was a couple years ago. So 235, a little disturbing.
I know fans pay a lot of attention to 40 times, but when you're watching the position drills for these edge rushers, right, what are the ones that you're focused on the most?
I think the drills that show get off, initial explosion, the ability to move off the ball, that quick reaction time. And then also for a lot of these guys, when they're asked to drop in space, that's something we didn't see a lot on tape. For a lot of these players, we see them, you know, get after the passer. That's a lot of things, or a lot of times that's all they're asked to do is just, you know, find the quarterback, get after him, disrupt what he's doing in the backfield. But for a lot of these players, when you're projecting them as conversion guys, I want to see how they drop in space. How do they hold up on their feet? Vic Beasley, Bud Dupree, we mentioned both of them. Randy Gregory, Shane Ray out of Missouri, another one. We have to see them. How do they handle themselves in space with space responsibilities? But also, how do they move? What are their movement skills? Change of direction, their hips, their flexibility, that type of thing. Those movement skills.
Where does Shane Ray fit into the conversation? Do you see him as a 4-3 end? Do you think he's a 3-4 outside linebacker at the next level?
For me, his best fit as a 4-3 end, a right end in a four-man front, because his best asset is his first-step explosion. He has the best first-step in this class. And so for me, I want that on the line of scrimmage, being able to use that first step to get around the tackle, around the edge. But some teams, some 3-4 teams, will take a look at him. And if he's there in the mid-first, he's in that conversation. So how he performs this week, standing up, performing those linebacker drills will be important.
Dane, do you think that Leonard Williams out of USC is the best defensive player overall in this draft class?
I do. Not only defense, I think he's the best overall player. On my board, it's Leonard Williams, Jameis Winston, Dante Fowler. That's how my top three goes. Leonard Williams is just he's a monster. 3-4, 4-3, you can play him anywhere you want. He wins both with quickness, with power. He understands leverage. His production isn't what you would expect for a player that just appears so dominantly gifted. But he can be that type of player in the NFL, I believe. I think when we look at this draft 5 years from now, we look back, I think we'll be talking about Leonard Williams as the most accomplished player from this draft.
Very impressive. How about the rest of the defensive linemen? Who are the players you're intrigued to see how they perform here during the drills?
Well, Danny Shelton, for a kid that's 340 pounds, I've never scouted a nose tackle that makes more plays outside the hashes. He can move and carries that weight so well, especially on tape. He looked more 360 range, so he's 340 now. How will he look in the movement skills? I think the movement drills, I think he'll perform really well and test off the charts. So Danny Shelton, he's only helped himself from the Senior Bowl. Top 10 pick. I think right now I'm slotted number 7 to the Bears.
Do you have him as that Haloti Ngata type? I know that's a name I've heard a couple of draft analysts throw around. Do you see that comparison?
You see the traits to be able to have that type of impact, because
gotcha,
he has not only the wide body, but the upper body strength, and then he has range. He can move up and down the line of scrimmage. He can do a lot of things for you. So, putting a Haloti Ngata comparison on him is high praise, but he shows the ability to be that type of player.
What do you think of Eric Armstead of Oregon, who 6'7", I know he's drawn to Calais Campbell for, right, you know, his size. What do you think of his draft stock here?
He's supremely talented, and the combine's made for a player like that, because he's so gifted athletically. He 2 sacks last year. I mean, you have a lot of questions about him. Where does he fit best? Is he a 4-3 end, 4-3 inside tackle? Is he a 3-4 guy? I think the Calais Campbell comparisons are probably what fits him best. He's leaner than you'd want. You need to see him bulk up a little bit more. But what he can do, both on the edges and inside, is impressive for a player at that size. We just don't see 6'7", 295, those types of athletes, in football much. So I think the Calais Campbell comparisons are spot on. And, that's the type of player he could be. So I think 3-4 teams will like him a lot. After he runs here and after he performs well, I think top 15 is realistic for him.
What do you think of Jordan Phillips from Oklahoma, who size-wise, off the charts, has the athleticism, should perform well.
Right.
Question is, where exactly does it fit?
Right. Yes. Talking about the size, it's you don't find many guys that move that way for a 6'6".
300.
Yeah, right, and the 300? Way he and that fluctuates to 320, 330. So, how he performs this week will be big. See how he moves. Biggest thing with honestly with him is the medicals, the durability. Long term, can he hold up? He had back surgery last year, missed a good portion of the season. Played healthy this year, but the long-term effects, because when you're talking about guys that size, the medicals really play a big part, especially when they're a physical game like this where contact's a big part of it. So Jordan Phillips, a player you like, medicals have to check out before you're going to draft him first round.
Lastly, I want to touch on a few of the inside linebacker prospects here. Eagles fans are intrigued by Eric Kendricks, brother of Michael Kendricks. Right. Checked in 6 feet tall, same height as Michael. 232 pounds. Michael's 240. Michael's very good blitzer. Seems like Eric is more of a better all-around tackler. What do you think of Eric Kendricks, and how do you think that he'll shake out in this draft class?
Yeah, and Eric even said, he admitted, I'm not a blitzer. That's something I wasn't asked to do at UCLA. But to contrast that, he was asked to play in coverage. He was asked to be that run stuffer, and he could do both. You saw him make plays all over the field. The range, the motor is outstanding. I don't think he'll test quite as well as his brother. We saw Michael, 4.54? I mean, the 4.4s even. He was really impressive here in Indianapolis 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. Eric won't be probably as impressive, but, talking to him yesterday, you could tell he knew what his brother's times were, and he wants to beat him. He has that competitive drive in him. So I wouldn't count against him. And some people, the size isn't there. He might not be the fastest. But again, he's a player I'm not betting against because his tape's so impressive. The way he moves around the field, the motor, the instincts, he sniffs out plays and he makes plays. And he can play in coverage. And in the NFL, there are 32 teams right now who could use an extra linebacker who can help you in coverage. Guys that can stay on the field for all three downs. He can be that type of player. And so Eric Kendricks, second round range, a good option if you need a player, a weak side linebacker, a player that can hold up in pass coverage and play the run.
Now, you mentioned the coverage aspect, and that's a big question with some of the other top prospects like Benardrick McKinney of Mississippi State, as well as Denzel Perryman of Miami. Do you think that they'll be able to showcase some of that ability here during the position drills to help their stock or to solidify their stock?
I think that's something they can at least help show that they can do it. Perryman was asked to do a lot of zone coverages at Miami, didn't do a lot of man-to-man. That's something that I know he needs to improve on. And then McKinney, it's tough with him because he almost looks like a defensive lineman when he's asked to play in space. He really struggles. To me, he's more of a two-down thumper, a guy that you want attacking the run, playing downhill. But when you ask him to go in reverse and handle space responsibilities, he just doesn't have the same effect. And so for me, McKinney, two-down thumper, a player I wouldn't consider in the first round. I'm not sure I'd consider him in the second, third round, just because he is a little limited. Against the run, he's outstanding, but in today's NFL, you need guys that can stay on the field and play against the pass and that type of thing. So those questions are going to hurt McKinney, in my opinion. But Perryman, same type of thing, but I think he has more ability to evolve as a better cover guy.
So who is a name under the radar that after this weekend in Indy, there's going to be buzz about he's rising to charge and all that. Is there a guy in the front seven on defense who you think would fit that bill?
I think there could be a few. Zach Hodges out of Harvard, a kid that went to the Senior Bowl, held himself, carried himself well. I think he could test well here and do a nice job. He was at Harvard. He played on the edges. He played inside. He played in space. He played everywhere in college. So coming here, I think he can show that versatility by performing in different drills and really showing off his ability to put his hand on the ground, play in space. So I think Zach Hodges out of Harvard, a player to watch.
Dane Brugler from CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. Thanks for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, for our Pick 6 this evening, we decided, since the Eagles play a 3-4 front, which players would be the best fits along the defensive line for the Eagles 3-4 scheme. So you're going to be looking at bigger guys. You're expected two gap here. So I'm going to kick things off, and then it's a player who Fran likes. So I'm sorry I'm stealing him from you. Carl Davis from Iowa, 6'5", 320 pounds. Again, like you said, Fran, the question with him is, he was physically gifted. Why didn't you get that production in college? you know, can they translate that to the NFL? Can they improve on that in the NFL where he's almost a better pro player than he was a college player?
Yeah, and I think that's going to be ultimately the biggest question there with Davis, but a guy who is incredibly impressive down at the Senior Bowl in Mobile at the end of January. I'm excited to see what Davis will bring to the program. My next guy is going to be Joey Mboo, another player who's similar to Davis. I think can play a number of different positions along the defensive line. He's got an unbelievable wingspan, over 34.5-inch arms, an 82.25-inch wingspan, which is just unbelievable. He was a track star in high school and throwing the discus and the shot put. I love his ability to be able to hold the point at the line of scrimmage. I think he's a very good run defender. He's a tough kid, high motor. I really like what Joey Mboo brings to the table out of Houston.
Unfortunately, we're not going to see him during the combine. He's not able to work out. My number two guy, Mario Edwards from Florida State, 6'3", built low to the ground. You know, during his press conference at the NFL Scouting Combine, he did say he wanted to, you know, play for the Cowboys. He has NFL bloodlines, you know. But in terms of what we're looking here for the Eagles, and again, one thing I guess I should couch this with is we're not looking at the guys who we talked about already in the Fran versus Machine, the consensus top five ranking. So we're looking at some of the not really under the radar, but the next tier guys. So I'm going to go here with Mario Edwards.
Yeah, and Edwards is an interesting guy just because he's flashed the ability to be very, very good in the past. This season in 2014 was not good. He still came out and entered the draft, so he's going to answer a lot of questions from that standpoint. The next guy that I'm going to go with, a guy that you talked about earlier in the show, or actually – yeah, I believe we did bring him up earlier. Stanford defensive lineman Henry Anderson, 6'6", 294 pounds, reminded me a little bit. I liked this guy more last year, but he reminded me a little bit of Taylor Hart, who the Eagles drafted out of the University of Oregon. But Anderson,
the Feely winner.
That's right. Anderson is a guy that's got the ability to rush the passer. He's got the ability to defend the run. He's very technically sound, a really clean prospect. I really like what Anderson brings.
For those who don't know, Bo Wolf coined the term the Feely. It's a player who is inactive for all 16 games of the season. Ellis McCarthy from UCLA is my number three guy. We learned today he's a big comic book fan.
Huge.
Huge comic book fan.
Compared his game to the Hulk.
Yes, indeed. So long arms, you talk about with the Eagles, with prospects they like, when they drafted Benny Logan in the third round a couple years ago, that the long arms he has, 6'5", 338 pounds, you know, could be another nose tackle type prospect if he were in the Eagles system.
Yeah, no question about it. A guy that declared for the draft, another guy with very minimal production. He only had 4 career TFLs, 6 career sacks, and 8 starts in his career. So that's going to be the big question there with McCarthy. The next guy I went with is a guy that was a late addition to the Senior Bowl, got added just before the start of practices, but a guy that when I watched him at Arizona State was very, very impressed. Marcus Hardison, who's a JUCO transfer, played 2 years there as a defensive end at 6'3", 370 pounds. You wouldn't expect a guy at that size to play defensive end in a 4-3. He did that. He has some athleticism, really good movement for a guy that size, has some position versatility. He's just got to get stronger and tougher. I don't think he uses his hands really, really well. So he's just gonna get, if he can get more proficient as a technician, I think he has a long way, a very, very high ceiling that he could provide.
My number four guy, Danelle Hunter from LSU, someone who is – you know, he's going to be very tempting to scouts during the pre-draft process. Someone who flashes a lot of potential. You don't see the consistent production all the time. Another guy with long arms, good bursts. Someone who could be just too tantalizing for a team to pass up.
Yeah, definitely one of the more intriguing edge rushers as we transition to that position here for our pick six. Hunter is one of the guys that really flashes when you turn on the tape. Still a young guy, too, at only 20 years old. The next guy that I'm going to go with, staying along the edge rusher theme, Lyndon Trail out of Norfolk State, the former big-time recruit.
Long player.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
I mean, at 6'7", 269 pounds, his arms came in at 34 7/8 inches, which is incredibly long. Huge hands, 10.5-inch long hands. I think this guy's got a ton of ability. He looked so fluid in space. I think he's going to be one of those guys tomorrow that when you're watching the combine, you're going to say, wow, look at that guy move, because you don't typically see guys at that size. The guy's 270 pounds. He's going to be dropping into the hook area in zone coverage drills, and he's going to look unbelievable doing it.
I mean, there are some prospects when they walk through the hallway and you see them for the first time that make you kind of be like, wow, that dude looks like an impressive prospect. You know, TJ Yeldon was that for me from the running back position. Lyndon Trail, in terms of the D-line edge rushers was that type of player for me, that type of prospect. Next, I'm going to go to the Ivy Leagues. Zach Hodges, 6'2", 250. Very, very productive against lower-level competition, but a person who I think that with some added strength, he has the athleticism to play in space, could develop into a nice prospect for a team.
Yeah, no question about it. We got to see him at the Senior Bowl, and he was very impressive down there in Mobile. The next guy I'm going to go with is a guy that we didn't see at the Senior Bowl, but we saw him at the Shrine Game at least for one day of practice. He showed up late because of the national title game. That's Oregon's Tony Washington, a guy that I think I'm higher on than most people just because of the well-rounded nature of his game. Started 30 games on the outside for Oregon in that 3-4 defense. I think his best fit ultimately is as a strong side linebacker because I don't know that he's a natural pass rusher, but I think, you know, in a Connor Barwin type role, I think he could have a lot of success, whether it's in a 3-4 or in a 4-3. I think he could stand up and play as a strong side backer in a 4-3 defense as well.
All right, my last guy, a player with local ties to South Jersey, Max Valleys out of Virginia. Some question whether he came out a year too early, but 6'5", 251 pounds. He's only 20 years old. He was productive, you know, at the ACC level. So, you know, a team could take him, give him some time to develop, and in time could be a good player.
A guy that when I watched them earlier this season, I mean, he really flashes. But when you watch him closely, you know, down in, down out, you are left wanting a little bit more. So Valles is a guy that's got a ton of talent. He's still young. I believe he's at this point, he's only 19 years old. So you're going to get a guy. He'll be a 20-year-old rookie, but I believe he's only 19 at this point. As a moldable ball of clay, he could be something that someone could take just based on the pure upside. My final guy as we close out our pick six segment, Obum Gwacham, a guy that we've talked about in the past, a former wide receiver, turned into a defensive end a year ago at this time, going into Oregon State's final year of spring ball. Has great size, 6'5", 246 pounds. I believe he was in the 220-pound range a year ago, so he's put on over 25 pounds. He's got really long arms, 34.5-inch arms, 10-inch hands. He's got the frame. He's got the motor, a high-character kid, has athleticism. I think Gwacham is a guy that can make a team, play special teams, and offer a role as a sub-package rusher early on.
You know, so many questions. I mean, how does a prospect go into his last year of college ball being asked to transition to the other side of the football? I mean, and I'm sure he must have had some kind of NFL aspirations. How did he put on all that weight? You know what, Fran? Let's ask him ourselves.
We should.
First unofficial visit, Obum Gwacham from Oregon State.
The unofficial visit.
We're pleased to be joined here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com by one of the most fascinating stories here at the NFL Scouting Combine in former Oregon State defensive end Obum Gwacham. Now, Obum, you were a wide receiver for the first 3 years of your career?
Yes.
So how exactly do the coaches come up to you and say, you know, Obum, you're doing good at receiver, but we want you to come to the defensive side of the football?
Well, funny story about that is Coach Joe Silmalu, who is our defensive line coach, he's kind of, you know, ever since I signed my LOI, he's been on me every day about, during practice, he'd always talk to me about, you know, putting my hand on the ground, whether or not I was ready to do that. And I was, you know, I'd always jokingly shy it off and say, no, coach, I'm a receiver. I'm not playing DN for you. And after Scott Crichton left two seasons ago, he gave me a call at home and said, look, Scott left. You know, we're a little thin at defensive end, and I think you could really make an impact at this position. So, you know, I thought about it. Talked to my family about it, and you know, they say they support me regardless of the decision I made, and I decided, you know what, it's the last year, I'm going to do any and everything to help our team out. So pulled the trigger, and as soon as I made that decision, I was like, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I'm jumping into it. So I started meeting with Coach Joe in his office one-on-one to try to learn as much as I can before spring ball, and you know, that was a success, and then we carried that on throughout the summer workouts. That helped as well, and then throughout fall camp and into the season, it's just gotten better and better.
No, Boom, were you thinking at the NFL at all whatsoever before this transition? Were you like, if I have any aspiration to make it in the NFL, how am I going to be able to make this position change in 1 year and then go to the league? Did that come across your mind at all? Or
I mean, the NFL, it's always been something that I've always wanted to happen. I've always wanted it to happen, regardless of what position I was in. And I actually felt like switching the defense to the defensive side would be more beneficial.
Okay.
And, you know, it would allow more people to give more looks at me at that. So, definitely.
So, the spring, you talk about the spring practice. Your very first spring practice or the spring game, you had 2 sacks in, am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, did that kind of give you that taste? You know what? Maybe this thing might be easier than
I mean, I wouldn't say easier.
But
it's, it was more fun. And, when you have a coach that's able to just simplify the defense and allow you to just play fast, it makes the game that much better.
So, in the time period from when you finished up as a wide receiver to now, as you check in at the combine, you've gained roughly 40 pounds. How have you gone through that transformation?
Eating a lot. you try very hard not to get sick of eating, but you just gotta think about, you know, what's at stake and what, you know, what can come from it. And you know, I have that goal to truly make a team and, you know, truly be a value to a team and, you know, truly helping a team win games. So once I'm able to think of it like that, you know, I'm able to eat, you know, another serving of that spaghetti or, you know, more of that bread, whatever it is. So that's just kind of what I have to keep in the back of my mind at all times.
Oh, and last question for you, I'll let you get going here. Obviously, a lot of Oregon ties with the Philadelphia Eagles. Head coach Chip Kelly, obviously. Favorite memories of the Civil War?
Favorite memories? Wow. I mean, it's very unfortunate that, you know, throughout my time there, we were never able to beat Oregon.
Okay.
But, I did love, it was my freshman year, actually, my redshirt freshman year, when we, when Oregon came into Corvallis and we, you know, we wore our Giant Killer jerseys for that game. That was just, you know, a fun game. My brother actually came down to watch that game as well. That was probably my favorite memory.
Obum Gwachum, former defensive, and I would imagine a linebacker, probably outside linebacker, possibly at the next level from Oregon State. Thank you very much for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
On the clock.
It's time for the over-unders. I'm going to do my little intro in there, along with Chris Barlow, who does a fantastic job with those bumpers. So we're going to do a little over-under action today. You know, again, we're sticking with the front seven of the defense theme. So I've got, how many questions? I have four here. Four,
all right.
Four prop bets, so to speak. And we'll start with Dante Fowler.
Okay.
Very intriguing prospect. Someone who was very versatile, was used in multiple defenses at Florida under Will Muschamp. Someone who played at different weights. I think he finally has the weight where he wants to be at. So someone who's going to be highly coveted.
May have had the best press conference of any player at this at the scouting combine throughout the entire week. He was one of my favorite guys to talk to.
So over under for his draft spot.
Okay.
7.5.
Oh, definitely. I think he's certainly a top five pick to me. I would say that he could go as early as two, but I would think that he'll go number three to Jacksonville. I think Tennessee is certainly going to take Leonard Williams. I would be very surprised if they went another direction. And I think Fowler, for a team that the Jacksonville Jaguars that need a pass rusher, I think he's definitely going to slide in there. I would be surprised if he's not a top seven pick.
All right. So next, off the line linebackers.
Okay.
Who go in the first round.
Ooh.
3.5.
3.5. So you've got McKinney, Kendricks, Perryman. I'm going to take the under.
I could go Shaq Thompson. I'll give you Shaq Thompson as well if you'd like.
That's true. That's a good point. I don't have him up there, so that's why I didn't include him in that initial three. I'm going to take the under, though. I think that one, maybe two of those guys have a chance. If it was 1.5, then I think that would have been very, very tricky for me. But I'm going to take the under.
Okay. So next, you like Carl Davis.
I do.
We've talked about him a couple times
on
the podcast already. So his over-under draft spot,
ooh,
26.5.
Oh.
So it's 26 is Baltimore, 27 is Dallas.
26 is Baltimore. Well,
just I was trying to find a range of teams. You try to guess needs, try to guess what direction teams might go in.
Sure.
You look at the mock drafts. So it's pretty much, do you think he's going to be a first-round is more or less what the question really
is. I think he's going to be a first-round pick just because of his frame, of his character, of his potential. I think that he's going to be a first-round pick. I don't, you know, release any of these. I kind of do them every once in a while, and I actually did my first one just, you know, for my own purposes, did a little mock draft just of my own, and I had him going 18. Was it? No, it was, where am I at here? 16 to Houston. So I think he could be a top 20 pick. Obviously, he was close to the top 15. Not that I necessarily think.
Who's that guy you have for the Eagles?
We'll talk about him at some point. We'll talk about him at some point. But Carl Davis is a guy that I think could go that high.
All right. So next and last. So I originally was going to do a different number for the off-the-line linebackers.
Okay.
Because I didn't want that and this number coming up to be the same.
Sure.
So I went a little higher with the off-the-line linebackers. Front seven players. Your last prop here. Front seven players.
Okay.
Drafted by the Eagles in this year's draft class, 2.5.
2.5.
Currently stand at 8 picks.
Front seven, so that could be an off-the-line scrimmage linebacker. Mm-hmm. It could be an edge rusher.
Or
it could be a defensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
2.5?
2.5.
Whew.
That's why I thought this was the
number. This is a good one.
And if you're talking needs right now, inside linebacker, you know, D'Amico's come off the Achilles injury. Casey Matthews is scheduled to become a free agent. Najee Good, he'll be healthy, but he missed all of last season, or pretty much all of last season, I should say, with the injury. Edge rusher Brandon Graham is a free agent. You still have Marcus Smith, last year's first-round pick in development. Trent Cole is not getting any younger himself. You obviously have Connor Barwin coming off his outstanding all-pro season. And then up front, you have a young, deep, and talented defensive line group. That's why I always am intrigued by the whole best player available philosophy, because with the way that this draft could fall out, could possibly be a D lineman there at number 20.
No question.
Get 20.
No, and when we talked about it earlier, I think this is a good group overall for the front seven. So it makes this tough, but I'm going to take the under just because of the perceived needs right now in other areas. I'm going to go with the under. I would expect an edge rusher, and I would expect a line off the line of scrimmage linebacker. I would be surprised if there was a defensive lineman drafted, but again, never know. We had two last year, and three the year before. So the Eagles have definitely shown the potential to draft multiple defensive linemen.
All right, so our last unofficial visit of the evening is going to be Eli Harold from Virginia. Just an inspiring backstory where his father was not involved in his life. He lost his mother when he was only 15 years old, and yet he is still on the fast track to be an NFL player. Let's learn more about Eli Harold.
The unofficial visit.
We're pleased to be joined here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com by former Virginia defensive end Eli Harold. And Eli, first thing I want to ask you is, you didn't have a role of father in your life growing up. And I find it quite amazing that you meet a lot of people like yourself here at the Combine who have gotten to this point, who have been outstanding college football players on their way to the NFL. What would you say is the biggest reason that you're sitting here today on the precipice of making your NFL dream a reality?
I'm the loss of my mother, you know, 15 years old. When I lost her, I felt like I lost my life also. You know, it really deaded me for a while. I didn't cry for a while, you know, but one night it really hit me. You know, I realized what I was losing, and she's buried back there with all her brother and sisters, her mom, you know, all her aunts and uncles. We all buried them in the same cemetery. So I go back there a lot when I'm home, you know, just sit by her graveside, you know, I shed tears on her grave. But, you know, growing up without a father, man, and losing your mother at an early age, I think it really forced me to grow up, and I was making adult decisions when I was 15 years old. You know, my older brother, who's 44, he's a pastor in the Church of God in Christ, he really, you know, helped mold me and, you know, helped me become a better person than the man I am today. But the loss of my mom definitely, you know, is the reason why I'm here, you know. High school, man, just seeing a lot of guys who have both parents, man, I just am very fortunate. You know, I had a lot of friends, close friends who was there with me when she passed. I watched her take her last breath. You know, just let guys know, you know, just go tell your mother you love her. Just go give her a kiss on the cheek, man. Just just show her that you appreciate everything she do.
How did you stay on that right path, though? Because so many people could, at such a young age, middle of high school, and you're a prolific athlete, or at that point you're drawing lots of attention, it's probably kind of like, you're almost getting to that point, you're going to make that crossroads, you're either going to go on to be successful or you're not.
Right.
How are you able to keep on that right road?
It drove me, man. It made me realize a lot, You never know what you got till it's gone. And since that point on, I never take things for granted. I just said, okay, I'm gonna ruin the world. I'm gonna shock the world. I'm gonna take the world by storm. Everything I want, I'm gonna get it. And that's how my attitude's been since I was a junior in high school. When that happened to me, I just had a mean streak from there on out. I could turn it on and turn it off. Seemed like the nicest guy in the world. But when it's time to work, it's time to work. It's not a day go by that when I'm training, whether I'm tomorrow, I'm gonna think about it, and that's what's gonna push me, to do what I do, possibly have a great day, man. And that's just basically what it was, man. I just let it drive me and let it help me become what I am today. And all the success I've had is because of the loss of my mother.
You grew up in Virginia Beach.
Virginia Beach, Virginia. Yes, sir.
Did you decide to stay at Virginia to be close to family?
Yes. Yes, that was the main reason. And Coach London, he was from my area, the Hampton Roads 757 area. And, guys like Vic, Percy Harvin.
Of course.
All those guys, I believe that my mom would have wanted me to play for a guy like him. He has kids. He saved his daughter's life with a bone marrow transplant. He had a great story. I had a great story. And we just touched base, man, and hit it off well. And I just felt safe, in his hands. So that's why I went to Virginia.
Eli, you had 17 and a half sacks in your 3 years playing for Virginia. What went to the decision to come out and leave early to decide to turn pro? Did that seize the day type mentality kind of factor into it?
Well, I haven't shared this with a lot of people, but I wanted to challenge myself. This class coming out, pass rushers like Beasley, Dupree, Randy Gregory, and a lot of guys who I'm leaving out. I say, okay, what do these guys have that I don't have? I guess we'll see on Sunday. I just really wanted to push myself, and I felt that it was time. School was tough. I was going through a lot of school. I wasn't always the smartest guy. Being a UVA, it's a tough school,
it's
man.
A very good
you know,
school,
you
yes.
gotta you gotta buckle down and do your work. But I was going to tutoring, had study hall. I was doing all those things. But I definitely wanted to challenge myself in this year's draft. I felt like with my numbers, I was ready to come out. I got a lot of good feedback from some of the guys. I signed with a great agent, and hopefully I can have a great day tomorrow and win some people over and show them how athletic I really am.
So you checked into the combine at 247 pounds. Do you envision yourself as a 4-3 defensive end, 3-4 outside linebacker? Are you hoping to show teams you can do both?
I'm definitely going to do both drills tomorrow by choice. I don't have to, but I want to show teams, that I can move, I can flip my hips, I can do all those things, because at Virginia, I was a defensive end. I never had that freedom, to drop all the time and do those things. But tomorrow is going to be that time, man, where I get to show, I love having my hand down, but I love standing up. I feel like I can do more, I'm more athletic. I can move better, I can see more, see the formation, and I know what to expect, So tomorrow is the day, man.
Eli, favorite memory from playing at UVA?
Favorite memory this year against Richmond in the second game. I got a 22-yard scoop and score, and I took a knee, and I dedicated it to my mother. So that was my highlight of my career at Virginia.
Eli Harold, former defensive end from the University of Virginia, all ACC second team last season. Thank you very much for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, we're going to save the best for last here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, and it is the interactive portion of the program, the draft mailbag. And when we put the question out there, pretty much, basically the question was, what questions do you have about the defensive front seven, the theme for this evening? And we were flooded with the Eric Kendricks question. Could the Eagles draft Michael's brother and pair the two brothers together in Philadelphia? And Mike Mayock held a press conference, a sort of end of the combine, at least from the media standpoint, press conference, and he was asked about whether he could see the Eagles drafting Eric and pairing the two Kendrickses together. And Mike was like, you pretty much are getting the same type of player. You ideally would want to pair or complement Michael with a thumper type, a bigger type like a D'Amico Ryans. So pretty much his answer was he wouldn't see it happening.
That is the standard thinking and has been for a long time in terms of 3-4 defenses. I would – my question to counter-argument
– I'm going to play a little devil's advocate.
Is that with the the advent of all these different wide-open offenses – the abilities to play in space that, you know, it's so important for a linebacker to be able to play in a large area. I wonder, and we've talked about it, look, over the past, you know, 5-10 years, all these two-down, one-down linebackers, that's what they are. They are one-down, two-down players. So do you want one of those guys on the field? You know, do you want a Bernardrick McKinney, who in theory would be that kind of a guy? And you look at guys in the past who have, you know, who have come out and been high picks, Brandon Spikes, who ended up, you know, he ended up leaving the New England Patriots, was on the Buffalo Bills. He'll be a free agent again now, so he'll be looking for his third contract. So, you know, I'll be interested to see how the Eagles look to address this. If it's, you know, one of these bigger, slower guys that's good at the point of attack, or if it's one of these you know, run and chase type linebackers that can succeed in space. So, just to play devil's advocate, I guess that's the question there.
I thoroughly enjoyed listening to what Eric had to say. Haven't watched, you know, much of him on tape whatsoever, but seems like a type of player who would be kind of exciting to pair him. And actually, the one thing that he was saying, that he wants to learn to become a better blitzer, that's the one that he's missing from his game. Whereas Michael, that's the one of the areas where he thrives. And it's almost like, even though size-wise, because I think Eric came in at 6 foot even, 232, 233, somewhere in that range, size-wise might not be what you would think you would want to pair him with, but it seems like the style of play might be something you could pair him with.
I would agree. And that, I would agree. He's a very, very instinctive player, very reliable tackler. You know, I think he does his own, you know, he holds his own at the point of attack as a run defender. So, you know, I'll be interested to see. I wouldn't count it out, but I wouldn't, you know, count on it either.
Okay.
Just put it that way.
The next question. So that question came from a lot of different people. I apologize that I won't name them all on the podcast. But this question comes from at Sam S. Slater 96. And is asking about a player that, I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with. But, of course, Fran, you are. Defensive lineman Grady Jarrett out of Clemson.
Yeah, and I think he's more of a three technique, you know, a guy that we saw at the Senior Bowl. I thought he was up and down that week. He's just under 6'1". He came in at the Senior Bowl at 288 pounds. Very, very athletic guy, lined up as a three technique, sometimes as a one technique in their 4-3 scheme. He stayed on the field in sub packages. I think he plays with good technique in the run game. But just in terms of being able to anchor and hold up at the point of attack, that's one of the big issues with him. Sometimes he's late off the snap. So there are some areas where I think he can improve. But ultimately, I think his best fit is in the 4-3 scheme.
All right, and our last question of the evening comes from O Snap You, or maybe it's Yo, probably O Snap Yo, which has the extra O at the end of it. So,
sure.
Fan of the program, has sent us questions before, wants to know about Vic Beasley of Clemson as a potential fit. We'll stay with the Tigers here, a potential fit for the Eagles.
Yeah, and Beasley's a really, really intriguing guy. We've talked about him over the past couple weeks because, you know, a year ago at this time, we'll say last summer, so, you know, 10 months ago at this time, was getting a ton of hype, you know, top 10 type hype. And right now he's not really getting that. And I'm wondering, you know, obviously he didn't play in the Senior Bowl. He bowed out of that game. He had another good year there for Clemson as a senior, but, you know, kind of fell off the radar a little bit. I'll be interested to see with a strong combine if he doesn't get more attention as a possible top 20 pick. But just under 6'3", they listed him at 235 pounds. I'm trying to remember exactly what he weighed in at. Here at the scene or at the combine, let's see here. He came
I'm looking
in
up for you as well. So.
Oh wow, he's going to be running with the defensive line. 6'3", 246 pounds. So still a bit on the lighter side. You know, I think he's got shorter arms, less than 33-inch arms. So you know that may hurt him with some teams. But look,
like the Eagles in particular.
Sure thing. And but the first step, the ability to come off the ball, the ability to play in space, the ability to turn the corner and accelerate. He's got really, really impressive physical tools for a team that's looking for one of those explosive edge rushers. He could make sense. I'll be interested to see ultimately where he gets drafted.
Yeah, so it'll be good to see what he does during the drills. Would you say that? Would you say, Fran, that he's one of the players you're more intrigued to see perform in the front seven defensive line drills?
Well, I'm intrigued from a standpoint that I think he's going to do very, very well. So I won't be surprised if he does well. But you know, athletically, I mean, he brings exactly what you want. So I'm more so excited, I would say, than intrigued.
All right, that's going to do it for the Saturday night edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Special thanks to all of our guests, and thank you very much, more importantly, for downloading, listening, however you're consuming the podcast. Thank you very much. We greatly appreciate the support. So for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Everyone, have a great Eagles night.